two Larrys and a Mike, but the Mike stands for microphone. But even that's not true because we have two microphones. Yeah. The whole thing is a sham, folks. It's all a big sham.
Well, we just thought it would be fun, especially here in episode one, to look back at music. We'll do some radio tales. We'll evolve as weeks move forward. We'll maybe play some radio air checks. I can't play anything because most of my stuff is in a landfill somewhere in Roanoke.
All the great air checks eventually end up in a landfill. Most of mine should have started. Landfill.
I get that. Well, that's why I put all mine there, because I didn't want to hear it ever again. But
it reminds me, Laban Johnson, my cooking partner at television, I would call him up on Monday and say, did you watch Saturday show? And he would say, of course I didn't watch Saturday show. I was there when we did it. There was no ego there.
That is so good. Well, recently on my first podcast, Mike's Side, we talked about your career, and I wanted to talk a little bit here in episode one of Two Larrys and a Mike. I wanted to talk about you, music. Was there a year of music that stands out the most for you?
Well, you gave me this assignment, and it was horrible. I just anguished over it.
Yeah.
Because if you'd asked me what's the best decade, I would have been much more prepared. Although, having said that, I couldn't tell you. Because I played a lot of really great music over a period of 40 years. The year that I have chosen is not necessarily the best year in music. That's not what I'm saying. I think that the year that I've chosen, which is 1968, was one of the more interesting years in music because we were transitioning from pop to rock and a whole bunch of different genres, sub-genres of music. You had, Bob Dylan. Crosby, Stills, Nash, people like that coming along.
Well, I was just looking at Joel Whitburn's Billboard hits of 1968. And how crazy was this? Judy in Disguise with Glasses, John Fred and his Playboy Band.
Yep.
Green Tambourine, the Lemon Pipers. Mm-hmm. Love is Blue, Paul Mariette.
Yep.
Otis Redding, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. And then there's Bobby Goldsboro and that real happy song called Honey.
Oh, that was...
you can come in off the ledge now.
I usually had to turn that one down. Diabetes from listening to that was so saccharine. But anyway.
So 1968, what makes that stand out for you?
By the way, Goldsboro had another one that just tore me up. It was Watching Scotty Grow, which
that.
We always called Watching Scotty Potty. You know, we always were making up names because disc jockeys get bored.
Right.
Pretty easily. And, what was one of them? Guantanamera, remember that song?
Oh, yeah.
It was called that one ton tomato. And a friend of mine who worked at ROV used to introduce Santana's Black Magic Woman as Black Magic Marker. We're getting way off here. I need to get back to the subject at hand.
That's great.
Well, speaking of which, in 1962, that's not the year I chose, but the top 50 was comprised of tons of sound. I'm talking the top 50 for the year.
Sure.
All right. A Billboard top 50. Soundtracks for movies and Broadway shows. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were tons of them that were being played on the air, like West Side Story and Camelot and even Blue Hawaii by Elvis. Dave Brubeck was also on the charts. Breakfast at Tiffany's theme song was there. Moon River, Judy at Carnegie Hall. That's the stuff that pop stations were playing because we just didn't have real out-and-out rock and roll music. I mean, like we would later have. Mm-hmm. That was still coming along. Tons of instrumentals, big on instrumentals in the 60s, especially the early and mid-60s. Stranger on the Shore by Acker Belk, who had the strangest name also in the world. Moon River, Let There Be Drums by Sandy Nelson. That was for rock. Okay, in fact, it definitely was. Midnight in Moscow by Kenny Ball. That was a great song. The Stripper by David Rose, of all things, you know. Strangely, pop music and what was rock then, like Roses Are Red by Bobby Vinton, Lovers Who Wander by Dion, and some Peter, Paul, and Mary songs were just sprinkled on the top 50 for 1962. However, in 1965, we started getting less of the soundtracks and movie soundtracks, and we started to see, of course, Motown come really strong. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the little pesky group called the Beatles from out of England.
Oh, they'll never make it.
No, they'll never amount to anything. So, but my chosen year, 1968.
Okay.
We'll get you now. It's really strange because already Motown artists had almost disappeared from the top 50 for the year. Mm-hmm. That isn't to say they didn't have a lot of records on the charts that year, because they had the Temptations, the Four Tops, the Supremes, Mary Wells, who else? I can't even remember all of the groups. But so they had a lot there, but only one of them made it in the top 50 for the year of 1968. And it was I Wish It Would Rain by the Temptations.
Wow.
Yeah. But anyway,
So why do you think Motown wasn't as noticeable? Was Motown getting the competition
from
other labels?
Oh, they definitely were. What was happening is we started getting Memphis Soul from Stax Recording Studio. People like Sam and Dave and people like that. Otis Redding. Chess Records out of Chicago with all of their big groups that they had. And also stuff out of Philadelphia.
Okay.
We had some
Atlantic play a role here at all? Or
and they did too. Yeah, they did too. They, of course, they had the Rascals. And quite a few others. So, yeah, Motown was starting to really get a lot of competition. Motown was aiming at middle America, white and black. And they wanted to sell especially to the white audiences because that meant they sold twice as many records. Chess Records, not so much. They were into funk and soul, as was Stax. And so, you know, they were getting some competition. It was a different, it was a funkier soul.
It
wasn't the tried and true, everything overproduced Motown. I'm not putting Motown down. They did a terrific job. They really did. Now, there was one regrettable trend that year, bubble gum. Yummy, yummy, yummy. I've got love in my tummy. 1, 2, 3, Red Light by and Simon Says. Remember those? But all was not lost because, and this is something else that makes the year so interesting. We had groups like Cream, The Box Tops, Jose Feliciano, helping to offset the oddball things like the Harper Valley PTA that was in there too. Valley of the Dolls and the Unicorn by the Irish Rovers.
Wait a minute, wasn't that about the time of Ode to Billy Joel?
Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah, Bobby Gentry, whatever happened to her.
Yeah. So anyway, it was an interesting year because we saw newcomers like the Bee Gees, the Doors, Simon and Garfunkel a year or two before that, Rascals, Richard Harris, Steppenwolf, Donovan, just to name a few. And then the Stones and the Beatles, of course, were coming in with all sorts of different kind of music than we had ever played on the radio before. So it was a little heavier, a little, you know, they were trying to respond to the funkiness of Stax and Chicago's Chess Brothers Records. And so they were coming on with albums that were, you know, unlike anything we had ever heard before. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and all that. Yeah.
Does it make you wonder during that era, during the showdown in 1968, why did the Beatles seem to do better than the Stones? Was it all about timing? Was it all about promotion?
Yeah, I think it really was. Well, you know, what I've always read, I read a lot of books about rock and roll, and what I've always read is that the Stones were the bad boys, you know. And so, and the Beatles were the clean-cut kids. And
for some reason, I don't picture Charlie Watts as a bad boy. Maybe Weekend at Bernie's behind the drum set.
Not today. he's seen some good days, that man has. But he still keeps good time, I'll tell you that right now.
Exactly.
He still keeps good time. He looks like death warmed over, but he still can play those drums. Yeah. Oh, and even Janis Joplin came along during this period. So you see, and here's the other interesting thing. We were still playing the likes of Dean Martin.
Okay.
Frank Sinatra.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those holdovers from the big band and pop era were still hanging in there somehow.
With Top 40.
With Top 40, wow. Absolutely, yeah. But my first couple of years of radio were so interesting because we were playing everything. You can't imagine all the stuff we played.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'd play an instrumental, and then you'd go to some crazy thing from the Stones, and then you, it's just nuts.
And now you realize if you did that today, you'd be called schizophrenic radio.
Yes, that's right. Back in the day, we were all they had, and they were grateful for us. And from a disc jockey standpoint, it made it interesting because you played from such a wide swath of music, and we weren't playing a top 20. Mm-hmm. We were playing a top 50, probably.
Wow.
Or maybe even the top 100, you know. So there was a lot to choose from. So if you got bored in radio, then nobody blame it yourself because you certainly had a lot of different music to choose from.
Yeah. Wow. I can you imagine, I guess, sitting there as a disc jockey behind a microphone, there was no music mix.
No.
Because the music was already mixed.
Yeah.
It was mixed
all
up.
It was all over the place.
Yeah.
It was all over the place.
Wow. So 1968 is the year that stands out the most to you.
Well, for that particular reason, yeah. I'm not saying it's the best year in music because there have been a lot of better ones than that.
Sure.
A long shot. But musically, as far as the variety is concerned, it was the most interesting year.
Yeah. I could see how it would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, the format on the first radio station I went to actually had a format. Nobody bothered to tell me this for like 2 years.
What? You didn't just go in and play your favorites?
Well, yeah, I did. So anyway, Bill Kramer let me get by with it. That was the funny thing. I came back from the Army, and Bill called me up and says, "Are you coming back?" And I says, "Yeah, I don't think so." He said, "Well, what are you going to do?" I said, I don't know. You know, I've been away for a couple of years, and I don't know, I don't think I'm coming back. He said, "Well, keep us in mind, and if you ever make up your mind, give me a call." So I laid around the house for 3 months and drove my Aunt Tootsie completely nuts.
Yeah.
And finally, I says, "You know, I'm not doing anything here. I'm not doing myself any favor. I'm not doing you any favors." So I called Bill up. I says, "Hey, you reckon I could come back?" He said, "Sure. I'm getting to this.
I love this.
So I went back. Well, there was a new program director. Mm-hmm. All the people I'd worked with had left in the 2 years I was gone. These were guys that had been there for 15 or 20 years. They all left. So all of a sudden, I have a new program director, Joe Williamson, better known as Seth. A very young Joe Williamson. So I come in and plop myself down and do my 4 hours, and the next day he comes in and says, "Could I talk to you for a minute?" And I said, "Well, you can talk to me for 2 minutes if you want to." He said, you're not following the format." I said, "There's a format? This radio station has a format? When did it grow up and get big and adult?" He said, "Well, yeah, you're not paying." I said, "Well, I didn't know there was one. Nobody told me there was one." I said, "I've always done pretty much what I wanted to do." And he says, "Not anymore, you won't." So I started working the format.
Mm-hmm.
And about 2 weeks later, Bill Kramer, the general manager, came back and he says, "Can I talk to you for a minute?" And I said, "You can talk to me for 5 minutes if you want to."
He got a little more time.
He got a little more. He was a GM.
Right. Yeah.
He said, "Something's missing from your show." And I said, "I don't know. I'm doing, I guess, what I was." He says, "You know what? I think you're better when we just let you loose. And you just do whatever you want to do. Formatically, musically, what have you." He said, "I don't like you on this format." And I said, "Well, there's a little problem here, Bill. Everybody else is on the format except me. I don't think that's fair." And he says, "I'll handle it. Don't worry about it. If anyone says anything to you, send them to me." And so from that point forward, I just did whatever I wanted to.
Oh, what a great radio tale.
Oh, that is a good tale.
Yeah
it's a good one.
Yeah. Good stuff. And thank you for sharing
Did
that.
Did the show improve? I'm not sure. It's the same old crummy Larry. Different day, different format.
Oh, good stuff. Good stuff indeed. Thank you for listening to Two Larrys and a Mic. If you enjoyed this show, please give it a subscribe and leave a review on your favorite podcasting app. We'll see you next time.